So tonight the talk is called Got Freedom If You Want It. And it's really about a fundamental shift or reorientation in our lives. Away from entanglement and dependency towards freedom. And so I want to talk about what freedom means specifically in the Buddhist tradition, what awakening means. So I'll spend a little bit of time on that, but I'm going to spend most of the time really on instant freedom. It's what we all want, right? We want freedom, not later, not somewhere else, but right here, right now. And freedom right here, right now, is available. I'm not talking about permanent freedom. I'm talking about freedom in this moment to be unentangled. And ironically, to be unentangled means to be connected, to be connected with our experience and aware of our experience. It's very different from being entangled by our experience. Hopefully I'll remember to mention that. So freedom here and now is available through our practice. That's the main topic, but I really want to talk as well about the bigger freedom. And mindfulness is kind of the rage now everywhere. I guess that's an oxymoron to say that. Mindfulness is the rage. There's mindful running, mindful bicycling, mindfulness for addiction, mindfulness for depression, mindfulness for anxiety. Someone told me there's a book on mindful poker. Or an approach to poker that's mindful. I'm sure it would be very helpful. But mindfulness in working with chronic pain, mindfulness in reducing stress, mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. This is all great and super helpful. And it's the way mindfulness has come into the West in many ways is very secular. It has nothing to do with Buddhism, nothing to do with religion. It's simply a mental skill that we practice. And it's being found to be helpful, of course, in so many different ways. That's awesome. We wouldn't want to take away any of that. And there's one really, when you divorce mindfulness from its Buddhist roots, what you lose, and the religiosity is, that's not a big loss, I don't feel personally, but what we lose, can lose, is the fact that this is a liberation practice. This isn't just about stress reduction or feeling less anxious. Those are great things. But the ultimate point of this practice includes all of that and transcends it to be a liberating practice, a practice that makes us awake and free. And so when we secularize mindfulness, let's remember that, let's not lose the deepest potential of the practice, and that is for awakening. In fact, it is the practice of being awake. It is the very thing. When we are really aware of our experience, we are in awake mind, even if it's just for a moment. So the more capital F freedom, or capital A awakening, the Buddha said it's indescribable. It's beyond concept. It's an experience. One cannot know what it's like through words. So he talked about it in the negative, the unconditioned, the unborn, the undying, the deathless. Nibbana is another word for it, or nirvana. It can't be described. It can only be experienced. but you can say things sort of about it. And it's a sense of deep freedom of heart. That's one thing you can say about it. Another thing you can say about it is what the freedom is a freedom from suffering. That, and this is the classical Theravada definition of awakening. There's actually surprisingly different definitions of awakening. The classical Theravada definition is not even the potential for greed, aversion, or delusion. If you can imagine that. You see the yummiest thing in the world. There's not even the potential for greed to arise towards it. You see the most awful thing in the world. There's not even the potential for aversion to arise towards it. The example I like to use is if a fully awakened being, this is, you know, in theory, had their hand cut off, there would be tremendous physical pain and no mental suffering, if you can imagine that. Absolutely no suffering around. Hand is gone, and there's blood spurting out. You know, maybe a tight clasp with the other hand or a wrap of a tourniquet or something will deal with the situation. But the thing to emphasize is that in the awake mind, there is pain. Pain and pleasure do not stop. Awakening is not about freedom from pleasure and pain. That we are sensory beings, sentient beings. So pleasure and pain will never stop. We will not get out of that. And that is not what we need to be happy. What we need to be happy is a psychological state where life can go up and down, and there can be pain, there can be gain, there can be pleasure, there can be loss. And our mind doesn't go up and down with all the ups and downs. The ups and downs will never stop. Never. Not if we're in a body and a mind. The freedom is that our mind, the little summary of all this is that pain is optional. Pain is unavoidable. Suffering is optional. We don't have to suffer, even though we're in pain. So, have you had a little glimpse of this? Have you been able in your practice to sit with something uncomfortable and instead of being in reaction to it, just decided to notice what it's like? An itch, a slight pain in the knee, throbbing somewhere. And instead of being resistant to it, you replace resistance with curiosity. Ah, what's it like? Oh, yeah, okay. You're just with it. And in that moment, those moments of being with it, you're not in reaction to it. You're actually not suffering. It's unpleasant, but there's no suffering. So if you've had a glimpse of that, the analogy I kind of like to use is just think of a professional athlete or an Olympian, someone who's dedicated like so much of their life to practice, practice, practice. And then they can do astounding things, right? Like a marathoner, right? Running 26 miles in a 5-minute mile pace, right? Like ridiculous, right? And it comes through an incredible amount of practice. People can do kind of superhuman things because of all that incredible hard work. So we could think that, you know, if we really wanted to be free and we get this promise that we get it, that, oh, right, if I can be aware of unpleasantness, I don't have to suffer. And we practice, practice, practice. If we practice an Olympian amount, maybe we would be fully awake, enlightened, fully enlightened beings where there's no potential for human suffering. I just simply hold that as a potential in the practice. So this is big picture nirvana. I think it's really cool to think that this is possible, not just for the Buddha, but for you, in this very heart and mind and body. I could wake up if I really wanted to, if I really, really wanted it, I could do it. And what a thing to do with this life energy that we've all been given, you know, very extremely noble, a path of the end of suffering. So we can get very inspired by this idea. And that's usually very skillful because it motivates us. And then we can get into some kind of striving for awakening, which is like an oxymoron. It's like civil war. There's no such thing as a civil war. By definition, a war is not civil. And striving for awakening cannot work. It's the very striving that gets in the way. We cannot get awakened. Awakening does us. We don't do it. It happens, but we cannot force it. This is what we can do. What we can do is show up for this moment. That's what we can do. And we need to do it again and again and again and again and again. It needs to become a habit. So, and there's the famous quote from Baker Roshi who said, "Enlightenment is an accident, but practice makes you accident prone." So we can be very inspired by this potential for awakening, but we can't do it. All we can do is be with this moment. I'll just stop with that much, just to see if there's any response, comment, question. Okay, I'll keep going. So now the main part of the talk is to get out of the pie in the sky and come back to here and now. Just notice right now, how you doing? What's your experience? However it is, let it be exactly as it is. Don't try to change a thing. Instead, just notice what it's like. If you're bored, ask yourself, what's it like to be bored? If you're excited, what's it like to be excited? If you're tired, what's it like? Notice how it is in your body. Bored, excited, tired, interested, whatever. Just notice. Just notice. See, mindfulness is not just something that reduces stress. Mindfulness is the key to the universe. And it's a very bold statement. But this is the little mini thing that we can do, tiny thing to show up again and again that unlocks our suffering over the long haul. So, now this is just one path and one perspective, but for me, it's the key to the universe. It can be for you too if that's, you know, if you're inclined to this particular path. There's other paths. When we practice mindfulness, now we're getting to freedom here and now. What we are practicing, we all know we're practicing awareness. That's what mindfulness is, knowing what's happening right now. But we're also practicing many other qualities. We're practicing non-judgment. We're practicing acceptance. We're actually practicing kindness, because to be with something, if you're in any kind of aversion to it, that's, you can't be with it. We have to have a certain level of kindness to be mindful. We're practicing patience. We're practicing effort. We're practicing a lot of things. Something else we're practicing is non-interference. This is a very important reorientation. As I said when we did our practice, just let everything happen on its own. Our only job is to notice. And the noticing is non-interfering. It isn't trying to jump in, analyze, fix, problem solve. push away. We're just letting it be what it is. And this is so different than what we normally do that it just needs emphasis. What we are practicing is non-interference. Now, we need to interfere plenty in our lives. We need to take action. So this is not about just let everything be, you know, as it is. Because, you know, as Suzuki Roshi said, things are perfect just as they are, and things need some improving. Both are true. Both are true. This isn't about inaction, but in terms of our own inner experience, the non-interfering awareness is a huge change. It's a radical shift in relating to our experience, and it's a radical deepening of your freedom. If you can, instead of interfering with your experience, notice what it's like. So go back to that now. Just notice. If you're in a blissful state, a judgmental state, it doesn't matter. Just notice what it's like. Let it be exactly as it is. I wish I was more blah, blah, blah. Just notice what that's like. Let that non-acceptance be exactly as it is. What's he talking about? Notice that. What's that like to be in that thought? Feel your body as you notice it. Now this is where faith comes in. This is a two-sentence quote I'm using from a retreat I was on from a Vipassana teacher, Anna Douglas. She said, what we're practicing is non-interference. The faith part is this. When we get out of the way, everything self-liberates. We're practicing non-interference. When we get out of the way, everything self-liberates. This is where, if this is not your experience yet, this is where some faith will help. Trust that this can be your experience if you keep going with your practice. You will see that fear can arise. Instead of being afraid of fear, which is our natural reaction, we don't want to feel fear. We resist fear. Instead of doing that, we're like, what's it like to be scared? So we notice. We notice in our body. We notice that the thoughts are future thoughts. Fear is an emotion about the future. We notice the thoughts are unpleasant. If we were noticing pleasant future thoughts, we'd have desire. But we're noticing unpleasant thoughts, so we have fear. We notice that. There's future thinking, and it's unpleasant. We're imagining an unpleasant future. We notice that, and we feel, you know, the butterflies or the tingling or the fluttering in our belly. And we just stay with the tingle, 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 flutter, flutter, flutter. Flutter, flutter, flutter is not scary. What's scary is, oh my God, I have 16 hours of things to do tomorrow in the 8 hours that I'm allotted, right? That's scary. That's a scary thought, right? Tingle, tingle, tingle doesn't say that. It's just tingle. So in our practice, we park our attention in the body experience because it's easier to bear. We notice those thoughts, oh my God, but we come back to the tingle. If we do this, we have to be curious. But if we're curious and we stay connected, you will find at some point you will have this experience. Your fear will disappear all by itself. There's nothing you had to do other than keep paying attention. And because everything's impermanent, over time the fear takes care of itself. And this is This is true of any of our difficulties, shame, fear, irritation, jealousy, all of it. We actually don't have to do anything if we are staying mindful of it. If we're not mindful, boom, we go into the, you know, what's the tumble cycle. Now, this is a powerful freedom here and now. And the Tibetans call it the lion's roar. We experience the lion's roar of confidence that our mind is workable. We can allow the fear, the shame, the jealousy, the irritation to arise because our kind attention takes care of us. And we can, and we learn a ton as we do this. And we see that our mind is workable. And we don't have to be so tight. Well, I'll do this because if I get that, then I'll feel this way. But I'll avoid that because if I don't avoid that, I will feel that way. And it's tense. It's tight. We can relax. Right now, it just kind of sucks to be me, right? Okay. Sucking, it sucks, and it's this way, and it's that way, and then, lo and behold, we notice we're free, right in the middle of it, because there's this knowing, this curiosity, and this interest that's happening, and we are really okay being in a difficult state. We are really, truly okay. And we will get more and more confident that we can handle our stressful work, our chaotic family life, you know, our, you know, lethargy, we don't want to exercise, and then we do exercise and we feel better. I mean, all of it. All of it. We're just better suited to meet it. And so, it's roughly a halfway point, so we'll take a break in a little bit. But let me stop now again and just invite input, if you want it. Yes. Sure, thanks. And I just paraphrase for the mic. The question is about working with things on the more intense side of unpleasantness, particularly fear, as well as when there's an experience like, I don't want to be with that, there's a lot of resistance, or fear of allowing the fear. And you felt like there was some awareness, but that didn't really seem to be decreasing the intensity of it. And so, what to do in that situation? in terms of all of this. So, the first thing to say is, generally, we can be with something much more than we think we can. So to, at first, err on this side of, I'm going to try this. I'm going to really put it to the test. Can I really be mindful with this very difficult state? And often we can, and the reason we can't is because we have doubt that we can. And when we're doubt, we don't actually fully commit and give ourselves over. And it's actually the doubt. It's not mindfulness that couldn't handle it. It's the doubt prevented us from being very mindful. So mindfulness is, we're much more capable of it than we're used to telling ourselves. We can wake up in the middle of intense fear, sobbing, you know, difficult states. We can really do it if we don't doubt that we can. So, but let's say you've tried that. You've really, actually there really isn't much doubt. You really just give yourself to it. And you try. And at some point some discernment is needed. Huh. Is this escalating? And is this going so intense that I just know I cannot do it? You know, then that's the point to just very wisely and compassionately turn your attention away to something else. If that doesn't work, then turbo distract and really feel good about distracting. You don't want to be open if you're just going to get overwhelmed. It's not helpful. But turning your attention away to something else can be helpful. You know, to open big and notice sound is one way to stay aware while checking away from an emotion. To feel or the groundedness of body, like feet, seat, that's a way to be out of the emotion but still aware. So mindfulness is a first resort, and really give it a good try. If that's not working, turn away from instead of towards. And then if that's not working, then turbo distract and feel really good about it. So, I mean, it's a good question because this is what we all face. We all face this. How much to open and when to open and when not to. And there's no right or wrong, there's just learning. But mindfulness is a first resort.
I'm curious if you would make a distinction between feelings and emotions. So that's one. And then I think at some point early on when I started coming to these sessions, I remember overhearing you say to someone in kind of discussion, how informative and useful your feelings are if you are in touch with them in terms of, you know, how you proceed. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? And then also, is there a difference between feelings and emotions?
So the question is what's the difference between feelings and emotions? And could I elaborate on that emotions can be really useful in giving you a lot of information? Is that right? It's just purely semantics. In the Vipassana world, we tend to use feeling for feeling tone, which is pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, and emotion for the mental experience, somehow lumped together of thought image, mood, and sensation. That's what I mean when I say emotion. So when we're scared, there's thoughts and images of the future. They're unpleasant. There's a mood, a kind of coloring of the mind that's maybe like tight, that's not necessarily physical. And then there's the physical sensation of physical tightness. So, and if you're having anxious thoughts that aren't really having much sensation, You know, it's just semantical. Is that an emotion? Isn't it? Eh, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what we call it. What matters is that we're aware of it. So in terms of emotions being useful in giving you information, is they tell you about your feelings and needs. They are your feelings. So scratch that. They tell you about your needs. If there's anger, we want to be very mindful of the anger. We don't want to believe the extremely self-righteous thoughts in anger, because it's actually a brain sprain when we're in a really difficult anger state. Our thoughts are vastly oversimplified. So our thoughts are not very reliable. And yet, there can be very important information inside the anger about what we're needing. It might be a boundary. It might be a sense that we feel there's real injustice and something's unfair. So, but we will not miss that if we're mindful. The information will be revealed to us. We often don't get to the information because we're so busy judging ourselves. I shouldn't be angry. I shouldn't be angry. Oh, my God. What's this going to look like? Blah, blah, blah. We don't even get to the need inside the emotion. But if we drop that and we're just with it without resistance, we fully allow it. We don't have to speak it because we're being mindful, you know. Then that information about our needs gets coughed up. And then once we're not so angry, we can be very skillful in communicating our need. So.
Sorry, I lost your thought. Communicating our need to who? About what?
Well, I'm being very general. The question is, what's the need? About what? It's a hypothetical situation where I'm angry. Mm-hmm. I'm angry because blah, blah, blah. You know, somebody cut me off in traffic. I don't know, you know. The need, the information is, wow, actually this is a life and death situation. That was very close. That was very dangerous. So my need would be for safety. And I'm, you know, you can't say that with a honk of a horn, but so that's not the best example. But, you know, once we're really not, we're literally hijacked in the midst of an intense emotion by our amygdala so that we do not think very sophisticated thoughts. It's a survival mechanism. We go black and white in our thinking, in strong anger, strong sadness, strong fear. We are in brain spray. It's been mapped. The amygdala shunts everything away from frontal cortex. So the information that's there in our anger only gets coughed up to us when we can sit with it and we're not being hijacked by our brain spray, by our black and white thinking. The next thing I want to say is that self-improvement is sort of the opposite of kindness. Now, there can be a way it's kind, but often the way we're approaching ourselves in the whole kind of self-improvement trip is really because we have aversion to how we are. Now, again, there's ways that we can want to you know, get better at doing something which are very kind and caring. But that's very different from, like, doing something to make a big project out of it. I could start to like myself if only blah, blah, blah. If the sentence starts like that, it's kind of a head trip to put on yourself. And one of the ways we can taste freedom here and now is that we can just wake up to our sorry selves exactly as we are. We do not have to be not irritated, not jealous, you know, not scared in order to be kind and wake up to ourselves. Kindness is about being kind to ourselves exactly as we are. It's not about self-improvement. And the way we can be free and unentangled with ourselves as we are is to just give up and really accept that this is how I am right now. That's key to say right now. And it's even better to say, this is what's happening right now. If you say, this is what I am right now, you're defining yourself by a fleeting emotion. In 2 minutes, you're going to feel differently. So to define yourself by that one is also going to be, like, ridiculous. So it's better not to say, this is how I am right now. It's just to say, this is how it is, or this is what's happening right now. It isn't you defining you forever. It's just what's happening right now. It's such a relief to drop connecting yourself to all of time. You know, this is who I am. It's not who you are. It's a passing show. It's how you, how it is right now. And so our mindfulness practice is both extremely easy and very hard at the same time. The very hard part is we need to be willing to wake up to how we are, how things are right now, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. That's the tough part. If we're willing to do that, it's very easy. We don't need to go to the spa. We don't need to sign up for a retreat. We don't need to go to psychotherapy. We don't need to get better and more efficient at our jobs. We can drop all of that. All you have to do is know how you are or how it is right now. That's all you have to do. It's so easy, and it's instant freedom. You are not struggling in that moment with how things are. You are just allowing and noticing. And this is where people start to taste the freedom that comes from practice instantly, right away. It's like, oh. And I was just recently working with a student who was talking about this, you know. They're really a lot better. And I said, well, what's really going on that's making you feel better? And, you know, and we were talking about practice. He just basically said, nah, I just don't stress when I'm stressed. And bingo. The way to not stress when you're stressed is to simply notice what it's like to be stressed. If you're doing that, there's something in you not stressed. The way to be scared and not and free while scared is just to notice that fear is happening. And then you're not scared of the fear. We are cutting this cycle of suffering when we notice how we are right now. And it's so easy. We don't have to self-improve in the slightest. All we have to do is notice the sorry state we're in. Now, it's also notice the joyful states. That's just as important. But we don't have to go anywhere, do anything other than be with what's happening right now. So try it out right now. What's your experience? What is your mental state? And how might that mental state be reflected in your body? Just all you have to do is just look for whatever sensation is obvious right now. It might have nothing to do with your mental state. Just notice. This is it. Give up the project of trying to be better. What a relief. Just notice how you are, how it is. And then what we do is we practice this over and over and over. But the actual practice is this simple. So when we did that whole thing of opening up to awareness of everything, we just don't interfere. We just let it all be what it is. We stay witnessing, knowing our experience. And the more you do that, the freer you'll feel. And you won't just be free as a byproduct of your practice. You'll feel free in the very midst of your pain and your fear and your joy. You won't be entangled because you will be connected. We get entangled with resistance to our experience. We get unentangled by connecting with it and seeing what it's like. It's very ironic. The comment is that loving kindness practice can really help when you're in a fear state. And it sort of helps, or just in a way, like you didn't say this, but sort of snap out of it or whatever. Yeah. So, and the Buddha said that love, and this is so common sense, right? Love is the antidote to fear, right? But I'm going to put two things together and say, the fastest way from fear to love is to love the fear. We don't have to love ourselves out of the fear. We can just love the fear. We can just be like, aw, fear. Nothing has to change. I'm just going to be with fear, and I'm going to do it in a loving, kind way. I'm going to hold fear the way I would, you know, embrace a scared child. I'm just going to be very attentive and not swept away by the fear. The child can be as swept away as they want because you're the holding space. So the fear can be as fearful as it wants. I'm going to be the holding space. I'm going to just, you know, love the fear, so to speak. So, yes.
I feel like my issues, I know this is obnoxious, but my issues are, feel like they're too big to do what you're describing here, to embrace, to allow and notice and not stress about them.
So the comment is that he feels like his experiences or issues are too big to actually not stress about them and to allow them. So I'm going to just go back to a very simple response. Mindfulness is a first resort. If you can do that, do that. If you can't do that, try to shift your awareness to something else. And, you know, one option is, you know, what someone mentioned about, say, a loving kindness practice. And then if you can't do that, turbo distract. You know, go to something that's really going to help you snap out of that emotional state, whatever that is. So,
I don't exactly know what a loving kindness practice is.
Yeah. Why don't I'll just because there's some other stuff I want to get to, so just talk to me after the group and I'll kind of go over that with you. So, the universe is demanding of us, if we're going to practice this freedom of heart, it's demanding some things. One of them is we have to accept joy and ecstasy and love and all the positive things when they happen and accept all the negative things when they happen. The key is to not stress about stress and not be overwrought when you're in a state of happiness or joy. We want to allow everything to come and go as it will. And the minimum fuss is to allow the unpleasant when it comes and goes and allow the pleasant when it comes and goes. We need to work wisely with both. So our very tough, very easy practice means being willing to have unpleasantness arise and pleasantness go. Reality demands it of us. We don't have a choice, because it will always come and go. That never stops. No matter how successful you are, it's still pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So, and guess what? We already have the tools we need. It's mindfulness and metta, you know. That's all, but that's sort of another topic.
Can I ask a question? So let's just say that you're in a state of fear or anxiety or whatever, and you're one with it, okay? You're accepting it. Is it just supposed to float away? I mean, how long do you accept it before you're like a crazy person? You know what I mean? How does it go away even though you're...
The key thing to ask yourself, the question is more like, am I supposed to just accept my mind states until it gets so big I like pop a sprocket and go crazy or whatever? The key thing to ask yourself is to notice, am I really being aware of my experience? If you're being aware of your experience, it doesn't matter if it increases or decreases or stays the same. It doesn't matter. You're just being aware. Oh, I'll be with fear now. Now, if you get to the point where you feel it's escalating to that point where you just can't handle it, then you need to do these other things. Turn away. And when turning away doesn't work, then just turbo distract. You know, not forever, just until it's passed. But if you're really being mindful, it will have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then it might end, and then a second later it might come back. And you need to watch for that. And there's times when something's really strong, it keeps coming back. But every time it arises, lasts, and ends, there's a relief. And, you know, then it can come back. But we have to get real and notice that that happened. It's a changeable state, even if it comes back. So, but the key thing is just be aware if you're being aware. If you are, there's no problem. It doesn't matter how big it gets. You're just being aware. We really can do this. Put it to the test. You can be more mindful than you're telling yourself you can be. Try me. Take it up. See.
I think my experience this week has been, you know, like the one day at a time with this particular issue. And then I finally, it's been going on for a couple weeks. It's been going for a long time, but really for a couple weeks severely. And I hit a point where I can do it and do it and do it. And then I hit a point where, my God, I can't hold this anymore. I've held it this many days. And it takes every single day, doesn't it? It's like a judgment or something to think that I couldn't hold it for however many days it takes.
Yes.
Acceptance, years, whatever it is. That part's hard.
Yes.
That's just
so, yes.
Okay.
The comment is that she's working with states that have been lasting for a while, difficult states, and they might continue lasting. I'll just address that. I mean, just the thing to notice when you're working with a difficult state is that we pull in time, and we're not just doing this moment. We're doing the last 2 weeks as well. Oh, my God, I've been dealing with this for 2 weeks. Actually, that's not happening right now. What's happening right now is this one. When we add time, it's a burden. It's a hallucination in the sense it's not happening right now. And this going on for another 2 weeks is also not happening right now. But this is not to judge it. This is to wake up to it and realize that that's unhelpful. When we're in a difficult state, watch for the time that you bring in. Oh, my God, I cannot bear this. I've been dealing with this for 2 weeks. Well, then you're dealing with 2 weeks of it. when you have that thought. As soon as you don't have that thought, you're only dealing with this one. It's, you lighten your load like that. And when you're not worried about, is it going to last for 2 weeks, you have just relieved yourself of 2 weeks of that state. You're only doing this one right now, because we don't know how it's going to go. And so that's really powerful when we get that. I have this burden of past and future. I don't have to. It's much easier to deal with this one right now. So, time. I just want to close with this, and then we'll end with some practice. So where practice goes is the capital A awakening, you know. It's the ultimate point of practice is deep, deep freedom. We've been talking about it, I've been talking about it much more as this sense of immediate freedom here and now. When you wake up to your experience just as it is and you get a lot kinder, you drop a self-improvement trip, you take away the burden of past and future and you simply relate to this moment as it is. That's very freeing. It's instant because we just don't have to get any better to be okay. And it's such a relief to drop it. So there's kind of a middle area of benefits that start coming. There's that, the big benefit at the end. There's the immediate benefit right now. And then there's all these other ways practice benefits us, where we start noticing we're less stressed in a stressful situation. You know, as another student said to me, you know, my week was pretty good. None of the stressors went away. But the way I related to it, I just didn't stress about it. So just imagine a few things, because this is what practice can do for all of us. Imagine a stressful situation at work. Conflict with a coworker. Or, you know, 12 hours of things to do in the next 2 hours. Or I want it yesterday and someone's irate, you know. Imagine that. Imagine, instead of being reactive, imagine being very calm. And in your calmness, you say, huh, there's what I'm going to do, and the rest, I just, doesn't even bother me. I just let go. I will do what I can do. The rest, this doesn't matter. All that matters is to do what I can do. That's all that matters. The rest doesn't bother you. Imagine conflict with a person that threatens you, that makes you feel unsafe in some way, that you feel is stepping on your toes, maybe. Imagine totally honoring your experience and also being very curious and empathic about theirs. Imagine that. Wouldn't that be cool? Imagine your relationship, your intimate relationship, being more intimate because you are more intimate with you. You are not afraid of your afflictions and you're not on a big self-improvement trip. You're showing up as a tender, flawed, loving human being. Imagine that. Imagine that your own pain, instead of meeting it with judgment and a sense of what's wrong with me, just a simple Dalai Lama kind of awe. It hurts right now. Compassion. No big story. No fear of what's wrong with me. Just a simple awe. May I be free of suffering. Ease. Ease with pain. Imagine the joy you see around you being, you know, like wind that fills your sails so that you just get happy when there's happiness around you. or even when there's happiness in you, it gladdens your heart to see happiness. And the Dalai Lama likes to quip, why not make other people's happiness your own? It'll increase your chances by 6 billion to 1. The wise, awakened heart just gets happy when there's happiness. It doesn't matter whose it is. It's anybody's. Our heart gets gladdened when we see someone happy. Imagine that. Imagine a time you have been in a kind of flow state. Sports, making love, you know, caring for a sick person in a really loving way, where you've just been sort of like strangely not there, strangely one with everything, just strangely at peace. This is all what our practice does over the long haul. Do you want that? Does this sound good to you? Does it feel good to you? How badly do you want this? As badly as you want it is how much it's available. It is available to you as much as you want it. How bad do you want it? That's the easy part. On this path, the hard part is that we have to practice to reap those fruits. This is not, you know, one of these bliss paths where we just open to, you know, just the group field and there's all this, like, awakening, you know. This path involves practice. And it's a particular path. So there's other paths that lead to the same thing. But this path involves practice. So just reflect on how much you want to be free. How much do you want to be free? And then let your practice in some way reflect that. If you want to be free really bad, practice more. You know? So. And with that, I will just end, and we will practice. We'll just end with about 10 minutes of practice.